Dr. John Kellogg found it difficult to accept disagreement or criticism. He surrounded himself with yes men who flattered him. At the same time, he used his sharp tongue on those he saw as opponents. So when Ellen White reproved this man she loved like a son, there were some who rejoiced.
Listen to this testimony, Grady. Sister White's really giving it to Dr. Kellogg.
Ah, read it to me, Betsy. I can't wait to hear him get his comeuppance.
Well, she says the sanitarium has been perverted from its original design until it resembles a grand hotel rather than an institution for the treatment of the sick.
Didn't I say so? Dr. Kellogg brings in all his rich and famous folks just to make friends for himself.
He claims those people help build the reputation of the sanitarium, so other people will want to come here and learn good health habits.
Well, it's obvious he's wrong. Does Sister White say anything about all this building going on? We haven't even paid off the addition that opened in 1878, and here he's putting up another addition for $50,000.
Oh, yes, right here. She says the financial embarrassment has caused Dr. Kellogg great care and labor and has nearly cost his life.
And him supposed to be teaching other people how to take care of their health. Read me more.
It is dangerous for any man who has talents, for Satan is constantly trying to fill him with pride and ambition. This will be your danger, Dr. Kellogg.
More than a danger. It's a fact.
Your neglect to attend the public worship of God is a serious error.
Be sure your sins will find you out. You can't argue with the messenger of God.
She says further, Dr. Kellogg has economy, but he should not let the habit degenerate into avarice and sharp practice. While he is liberal with his money, he is in danger of scheming. Petty sharpness is unworthy of a Christian.
Oh, she's got him out of the light.
No, wait, there's more. Some have indulged feelings toward Dr. Kellogg that are not justifiable. This is offensive to God. Dr. Kellogg does not claim perfection. The unwarrantable jealousy and prejudice against him are contrary to the spirit of Christ.
Well, wouldn't that frost you? Now she's stopped preaching and gone to meddling.
Exactly.
During 30 years of correspondence with Ellen White, Dr. Kellogg kept promising to do better. But he neglected his health until he was weak from poor nourishment and lack of sleep. Then his faults became far too evident. Still, the sanitarium grew. In 1883, Dr. Kate Lindsay founded the School of Nursing.
A school of nursing is just what we need, Dr. Lindsay. We can train young women to take their place in mission fields all over the world.
Exactly. Dr. Anna Stewart and I have planned a 6-month course.
That sounds about right.
We also discussed tuition, and we think $150 is about right, including room and board, of course. We hope the women can earn their way by working at the sanitarium.
Yes. Yes, the cheap labor will help the sanitarium stay solvent, and the students will get practical experience at the same time. Yeah, excellent.
In 1888, John and Ella Kellogg started the School of Domestic Economy. The same year, John was converted at the General Conference session. Too soon, though, his exhausting work schedule and tendency to criticize once more marred his religious experience. In the 1890s, his relationship with church leaders grew worse. It did not help that the doctor frankly considered physicians superior to ministers.
Come on, Will. We can't discuss the day's schedule if you don't keep up with me. Run faster.
Maybe you could ride your bicycle a little slower. Don't understand this bicycle craze anyway.
That's good exercise. Even stage stars and society people ride bicycles to keep trim. You should get one.
$100 for bicycles, too much for me. Especially on the salary you pay me. Please, slow down.
Oh, you're as weak as those mamby-pamby ministers who won't follow the health principles I've been trying to get through their thick heads for years. Call themselves righteous.
Don't compare me to them. I never even go to church. I have noticed that a lot of members do seem ignorant about health reform.
It's the minister's fault, I tell you. They discourage the people by their example. They're too uneducated even to understand what I teach. And what Sister White teaches, too, of course.
I'm glad you agree with Sister White.
Mostly I do. But I can't understand why she wants local conferences to direct physicians. That idea is totally unacceptable.
She's often said that medical work should be part of the church's mission, not its whole mission. Aren't you willing to work with the ministers at all? After all, you frequently preach.
Self-respecting medical men are willing to work on an equal footing with preachers, even though the preachers may be of inferior education and ability. But it is not human nature that doctors could be willing to be slaves to such men.
John, do you believe the Lord is leading Sister White?
Of course. I've tested her. Sometimes I've seen her wrong and said to myself, if Sister White knows about this, the circumstances would lead her to remain quiet or even favor what's happening. But if the Lord leads her to see it is evil and to reprove it, then I'll know she's being specially led.
And?
In not a single instance did she fail the test.
But isn't there danger in using your own judgment that way? What if one time you were overcritical?
Now you're sounding like one of those ministers. Don't you try undercutting me like they do. Oh, come along, we have to hurry and get to the sanitarium in time for work.
In spite of this attitude, John participated in church leadership and even served several times on the General Conference Executive Committee. In the meantime, he had a plan to help certain unfortunate people, and he wanted to talk to his mentor, Ellen White, about it.
And if people would just give up tea and coffee and donate the money they save, we'd have the means to build a home for orphans and the elderly. I'd like to call it the James White Memorial Home. What do you think, Sister White?
It's an excellent idea, Brother Kellogg. I remember, on one of our last walks together, Brother White and I passed the home of a colored washerwoman who was very poor. My husband was deeply concerned for her.
Brother White always cared for those in need.
Yes. He said to me then, "Wife, let's not forget the poor souls who have so hard a struggle to live. If I had the means at my command, I'd build suitable houses to rent to these poor people. We'll see what can be done to make their lot more comfortable."
But he died before he could do anything.
Yes. Well, I hope the General Conference approves your plan. There's a great need. I know you and Sister Kellogg have your home full of orphan children already. How many are there now?
Nearly 40. We've completely outgrown our quarters at the sanitarium. We're building a house for our large family, but there are many others still homeless. They desperately need love as well as care. I don't want this orphanage to feel like an institution.
Well, how do you plan to prevent that?
We can organize the children into families of about a dozen, with a mother to supervise each family.
At the 1891 General Conference session, the church approved John's plan. Thanks to the generosity of Mrs. Carolyn Haskell, a non-Adventist guest at the sanitarium, the Haskell Home for Orphans opened in 1894. Later in the year, the church built the James White Memorial Home for the Aged. Also in 1894, John and Ella Kellogg moved into their new house, the Residence, where they reared 42 orphans, who included several Hispanic and African American children. Neither in his home nor in any institution he was connected with would John Kellogg tolerate racial discrimination.
The next order of business for the board is a petition from a group of sanitarium employees asking that a separate dining room be established for persons of color.
Never! Some of my own children are persons of color.
I'll not tolerate a ruling which will prevent my children from eating at my side in the sanitarium dining room.
This is a board decision, Dr. Kellogg. If the board approves the petition...
I will immediately resign as medical director.
I move the board deny the petition.
All in favor?
Aye!
Petition denied. There will be no segregation at the Battle Creek Sanitarium.
Even before the orphanage and old age home opened, John was busy with other enterprises. In 1892, he had gone to Chicago to talk with a young woman whose very name had come to mean social work, Jane Addams, founder and director of Hull House.
I'm impressed with what you're doing here, Miss Addams. Day nurseries, gymnasiums, language classes, it's wonderful.
Thank you, Dr. Kellogg. There's much to do. Even those who have jobs make so little money, they're dirt poor. And the children. Before I started the nursery, some of them had to go all day without eating until their parents got home from work very late at night.
There's one more project I think should be added to your neighborhood center. The medical mission I told you about. The mission could provide health care, and the ethnic mixture of the area would make it a perfect place for our foreign missionaries to train.
Well, we could certainly use medical help, but... I just can't see my way clear to add a denominational project. I'm sorry, Doctor.
The Chicago Mission Project was not dead, however. Early in 1893, the year a new product called peanut butter was added to the sanitarium menu, two brothers, Francis and Henry Vessels from South Africa, visited John's office. Their visit would prove a great blessing.